Welcome to Marcia Juice and Company. We keep it moving on WEAA 88.9 FM, your source for cool jazz and the voice of the community. Tonight's show, we will hear three separate voices. One, two strong voices from Baltimore area entrepreneurs, Derek Chase and LaRon Finney, who've come together to present an upcoming national basketball tournament. A change of government agency needs to occur that has been neglecting our children, providing a haven for pedophilia and abuse. And the other is a voice, is a call to action for women to begin to consider ourselves with our mental and physical health. We will open up now with the ambassador, Tyrone Obaseki, author of 18 Years of Slavery, My Journey Through the Foster Care System. It's heartbreaking, disgusting, and certainly a call to action. Second half, we'll have Dr. Christine Horner. So stay with us. It's a really great show. We'll be right back with Ambassador Tyrone Obaseki. Thank you all for holding. Ambassador Obaseki has an incredible book called 18 Years a Slave of the State, the story of Tyrone Obaseki in foster care. And I'm just going to get right into it. We are not going to read the whole book, but I trust me, it is one that you need to have. Ambassador, how are you?
I am doing well. It is a privilege to be on the show this evening.
And it's a privilege to have you. So apparently, according to your book, you went into foster care at 2 months old, and you were orphaned and spent 18 years as a ward of the state, cycling between foster care, emergency centers, group homes, and psychiatric hospitals. What made you actually take the time and to bear that pain to be in this book, to start this book, to bring this information to public, and for, well, you've taken it to Congress as well?
Yeah. You know, that's an awesome question. And I actually attribute it all to faith and just a burning desire to help other young people resolve their emotional issues, and also to just kind of encourage other people to become invested in the development of the young minds of the community.
So, but you have literally, you went through this process. You were raped. You've gone through emotional and physical abuse. They've put you on psychiatric drugs. You've been through things that no person, no human person, no being should ever have to go through. For you to have survived all of that abuse and still be here today, one, is miraculous, and clearly God has covered you for you to be here.
Yes.
Through that process, what were the four things that you would tell us that we should be doing in talking about who you are and what you went through? What should we be telling the rest of the world about this system?
Well, the first thing we have to understand is that we cannot help the young minds of the community if wealth accumulation is the primary focal point. We have a lot of social service agencies who are not really focused on the development of the children, but they are looking at young people in foster care as a cash cow. And so I believe that once we really, really become invested in children and to look at them as if they were the next generation that's going to become the next leaders, then that's when we can do a better job at kind of ameliorating the negative effects of the system. Also, we have to understand that child welfare reformation is something that's going to take multiple organizational support. It's not just going to be one organization. It's not just one person. We need everybody who has an interest in children to actually look at the 500,000 foster youth that are in America. It's just 500,000 foster youth, but it's 2%.
Wait, it's 500,000 what?
Yes, there's 500,000 foster youth in America.
Oh, foster youth, uh-huh.
Yes. But it's less than 2% that graduate college. So what I'm hoping America understands is that if we have more mentors, if we have more faith-based involvement, and if we can also make sure that we are putting our children in emotional supportive places, that's when we'll be able to see a turnaround in the trajectory of our young people.
You said something a few moments ago when you said that when the foster care system no longer becomes a cash cow, what does that mean?
Well, what I mean by that, there's a lot of young people that I've talked to who kind of felt...
Wait, we're losing you, Tyra.
Yes. Hello?
Now, can you hear me now? Now we can, yes.
Okay. Yes, there's some young people that I've talked to, they've kind of explained that they felt as if in certain group homes and in certain foster homes, it was solely about money and not about their development.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I mean by that is we have to make sure that we're not just warehousing children just for a paycheck. I don't know if things are correct in Baltimore, but here in Texas, there is a level of care system where if the child has corrupt or bad behavior, there's more money that you give that potential provider.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of a reason to kind of incite anger or different things within children. Just in my own circumstances, I was body slammed, beaten, and restrained in a place that didn't even have any windows. It was a warehouse. And so then what the organization did was once they did these things, then they just document and say, oh, well, this child now has explosive disorder. Pay us some more money.
Mm.
So we have to understand that when there's not enough eyes in certain homes, then companies can do whatever they want for profit.
Mm-hmm. So now when you were in this system, and you went in as a 2-month-old baby. And so how old were you when you got out of the system?
Yes, I was 18 years old when I aged out of the system.
Mm-hmm. And so at 18 years old, you had gone through all of this madness. What were you able to do at that point? What did you do? You walked out of the door and what? I mean, how do you function?
Well, at 18, I took all of my baggage. I left the foster home, and I found myself on the streets of Houston, Texas. And I was trying to make it the best way I could. I had a couple of mentors that I would try to keep in touch with. But ultimately, the responsibility was on myself. And I had to be a man, and I had to suck it up and do the best that I could to graduate college. And so there was a lot of homeless nights. There was a lot of hungry nights. There was a lot of nights in which I didn't know what I was going to do, ultimately I found that it's not about what you went through. It's about your ability to turn what you went through into a success.
Mm-hmm. And so now you've graduated from college, you've written a book, you're trying to turn it into a movie. And when we look at where you've been and where you're going, how do we as citizens, and we're people listen to us from all over, what should citizens in this country really be doing, and how now do you think we should be focused on changing that paradigm for that, in that, because it's an industry, really.
Right. I think we have to get the faith-based community more involved. I have interviewed or tried to speak to numerous churches, and they have no organization, they have no program to even get to the orphans who are in the group homes or the foster homes. I think also we have to make sure that our legislators are understanding of what young people from the foster care system have been struggling with. And so what that means is we need some legislators to actually go out there and to make a presence so that the current needs are met. Also, we have to make sure that we are not allowing the psychiatric industry to use innocent foster children just as a mechanism to test the potency of psychiatric drugs.
Wow.
Because what I found is the way I was treated in the system in the 90s is kind of correlative to the way they treated the patients in the state hospitals back early in the day whenever psychiatry was starting out. And that's barbaric and it's inhumane. And I say this because I was the one who, you know, who was placed in the restraint jackets and straight jackets at 6 years old. You don't do that to a child. So I really believe that if parents also knew about this, just common day parents, school teachers, they would also say, you know what, I actually want to be a court-appointed special advocate for these young people. I want access to them, so, you know, just so I can have the confidence and the benefit of knowing the child is not languishing and deteriorating in this system. It's going to take numerous people, but we have to make sure that we have an open-hand approach to this.
You know, I just think that I can't wait to meet you in person at some point in life. Just the fact that you're still standing. After reading that book, I was devastated. I couldn't breathe. It was just a very powerful documentation of your life that makes me understand that there has to be change. And I would venture to say that the majority of the children that are going through what you went through are black children.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so those who look like me, and we as a community, we have so much work to do that we have just been negligent in not understanding what that really looks like.
Right. Yeah. You know, because African Americans make up what 13 to 14% of the American population, but we are overrepresented. Mm-hmm. In the foster care system as well as in the prison system. So all across the board, you see large amounts of African Americans in systems when we don't even make up the majority of the population.
Well, I'd venture to say that from that, help me with this, because I'd venture to say that the population you're talking about within the foster care system are the direct pathway and the direct pipeline to get those children into prison.
Correct. And that is true, because anytime...
It's shameful.
As, you know, anytime you look at a system and you see more young people who are coming out, going into the prison population, and also ending up on welfare and homeless, they don't have a choice.
Right.
So that's why we need more mentors as well. I've also had run-ins with the law because I didn't have anybody to turn to.
Mm-hmm.
I've interviewed children who said, well, all I knew was to steal, kill, and get locked up. That's all they knew. And it's so heart-wrenching. We just had a foster child here in Texas who murdered a lady at University of Texas, which was the first murder at UT since, the 1970s clock tower accident.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they said about this child, Marsha, was, this child has a history of mental illness, but they didn't talk about the abuse that he encountered.
That led to that and took that child into insanity.
Exactly. Wow.
Okay. Yeah. That's a shame. And so tell us about your book and how to get your book, because I think that every legislator, every leader, every family member, every church needs to have that book in their library and to start having real live, out-of-the-box conversations about this foster care system and what it is doing, not only in Texas, but across this nation.
Yes, yes. This book, and thanks so much for talking about this book. This book is very, very raw, and it addresses all of the emotional scarring and physical abuse that I endured in this system. And it is.
And it's painful.
And it's downright embarrassing in some instances, because we can do so much better. And this also talks about how some things happen as a result of being in church.
Right.
And church hurt is not always good, but it also shows how my grandfather played a big part in the abuse that I endured, which started with my mother. So this is a story, if you like the Antoine Fisher story or the Michael Orr story.
This is a story in and of itself, and it is...
Yeah.
It it deserves to be read. It deserves to be highlighted. It deserves to be discussed. Yeah. And you deserve an applause for having the wherewithal, the mental and physical and emotional ability to get through all that pain on those pages to present this book to the world. And we want to thank you. So we have It's 18 Years, A Slave of the State, The Story of Tyrone Obaseki in Foster Care. Now, how can we get the book?
Yes, you can purchase the book on my website, which is www.tyroneobi.com, or you can do a Google search and it'll automatically pop up under Amazon if you just type in 18 Years of Slavery. Once again, this book will change your life and talk about my journey through foster care.
Thank you so much. Thank you for giving of yourself. And may God bless you, and thank you for what you're doing now.
Thank you so much, Marcia, for having me on this show. It's been an amazing, amazing journey just to get here today.
I know, and we appreciate you. Tyrone Obaseki, Ambassador Tyrone Obaseki, 18 Years a Slave of the State, The Story of Tyrone Obaseki in Foster Care. You're listening to Marcia Jews and Company. We keep it moving on WEAA. Come on back. We're on to the last segment. Welcome back to Keep It Moving with Marcia Jews and Company. WEAA 88.9 FM, your source for cool jazz and the voice of the community. We have on here, we're making all kinds of twists and turns today. We have on the line Derek Chase and LaRon Finney. We entrepreneurs who are doing rocking and rolling throughout the city and everywhere else. They're all into all kinds of stuff everywhere. But these two men have the TBT, the basketball tournament, 64 teams, coming to Baltimore next week. And we were able to catch them in the studio and thought we would bring them on because we had almost missed them. How you doing, guys?
Hey, Marcia.
So, first of all, I want to know how you got here. What happened to make you guys decide to embark upon a basketball tournament with 64 teams, no less? Somebody.
Well, it was really the audacity, as we mentioned earlier today, of Derek Chase, who was in New York last year and witnessed phenomenal product that he thought could add, that Baltimore could add some value to, and we got together. He and I began pitching not only the leadership with TBT, but also lining up and coordinating anchor institutions to support this and creating a platform that would not only bring great basketball to the city, but also provide some solutions to eradicate the disparities that continue to plague the city in some areas.
So when you talk about could eradicate some of the systems that are going on, how do we do that? How do we use that for a benefit for our young people?
Well, the mission that Chase and I have embarked on is that, one, we tell our politicians, we tell black leaders, you have to be intentional when you're at the table, when you have an ability to impact folks that look like us. So as we began talking to the TBT organizers, we were intentional that the game had to be at Coppin State. We were intentional that there had to be a day of giving, meaning that not only would we participate in the basketball games, but that we would select areas within Baltimore that had those spotlights on them back in 2015, Upton Penn North, Mondawmin Mall, Cherry Hill, parts of East Baltimore, North and Gay, that they would participate in a day of giving around health and wellness, around jobs and entrepreneurship, and about eradicating community blight with a cleanup and restoration within those communities. So that was all the game plan that Derek Chase and I had laid out, and we're here today, a week away, very proud, not only being Baltimore citizens, but proud that we were able to bring this great endeavor, the basketball game, but also the day of giving to the city.
So, D. Chase, when you looked at this whole thing, how did you even find out about it to begin with?
Well, Baltimore has a great basketball tradition, and there's a basketball family, the Connolly family. Joe Connolly, who is currently the head of basketball for the Big Three, was the coach of the City of God's team. The City of God's name was named after a local store, City of God's, with Terrence Frazier. So we had been following the City of God's team for the last few years, and they kept going to the semifinals and finals and never and missing the finals. So we went up there on a whim, and when it is time, when it's an opportunity's time, then you have to recognize that it's an opportunity's time. But not only that, Marsha, you got to recognize that it is your responsibility to make sure that the opportunity manifests itself. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it was. Mm-hmm. It was knowing that Baltimore was in the crisis that it was, knowing that the people and the talent that we had in Baltimore, in particular with LeBron Finney, could take a product and enhance it. And then, you know, like I said, the audacity to be yourself. Mm-hmm. Say, look, we can help you. We can make this better.
So who are these teams? Where did the team – where do you get 64 basketball teams?
Well, one of the things, Marsha, that is really big around the country is the NCAA tournament, you know. So a large portion of these teams – are alumni teams.
Uh-huh.
So these are people that, you know these guys. Some of these guys may have played in the league by rules of the TBT tournament. They can't currently be playing in the NBA. However, they are professionals from Europe. But basketball players. You have an Ohio State University alumni team with Sullinger playing. You have a Syracuse alumni team with Dante Green, C.J. Fair, and other players who are playing. Earl Boykins, who was with the Denver Nuggets, was a player. Our own Josh Shelby from Baltimore had attempted to get involved. So these players are coming from the professionals outside of the United States of America. These are high-level former college players. Most of all have played in the NCAA tournaments, as well as, like I said, current professionals in throughout the European continent.
I love it. So now, how old do people have to be? This is for August 1st, August 2nd, and August 3rd. So how do people get tickets to go?
Okay, they can go to www.thetournament.com, thetournament.com to get tickets, and we also have them at selected Shoe City store locations. This is a family event. We have already distributed 700 tickets to community and youth organizations throughout the Baltimore region. We want, and we also have engaged the youth to participate in the Day of Giving. This is really, again, Marsha, Derek hinted to, this is beginning to change the narrative of what people think about Baltimore. Basketball is the baseline and foundation, but really integrating our kids and our communities and our organizations, and showing what a real public-private partnership can look like and how it can succeed in Baltimore as we assist Mayor Pugh in moving our city forward. This is just a great opportunity, and we want all families and kids and adults to come out on August 1st and August 3rd to not only enjoy basketball, but to be part of a movement and how we change the narrative of our city.
So this is, if I go to thetournament.com,
yes.
And you can buy tickets on the website.
Yes, Marcy, you can buy tickets from the website. Also, one of our great partners is Shoe City. So there are select Shoe City stores throughout Baltimore and a few in Prince George's County, I believe, that have the tickets.
Okay.
So we make it really easy for you to get the tickets. Anybody with the phone can be at the game.
All right.
Or you can actually just come and show up. And
you can buy them at the door. Okay, right. So you can buy them at the door. And now let me get this straight. Is it the August the 1st and August the 3rd, or is it – what are the exact dates of the game?
August 1st is – yeah, August 1st is the semifinals, and then the finals is August 3rd.
Okay.
August 2nd is the Day of Giving.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. And so for the Day of Giving, where do people go?
They can go to standupbaltimore@gmail.com, but we have a Day of Giving registration right at Robert C. Marshall in the Upton Penn North area. That starts at 8 a.m. on the 2nd. But we have, as we indicated, a big health and wellness event where folks can go and get screenings and education and services. That's from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Mondawmin Mall. We have a jobs and entrepreneurial event where we're going to guarantee at a minimum 300 jobs. We have reentry programs. We have expungement programs. We have workforce development. That's from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Wow.
At Coppin State University. And then, again, we're going into the Upton Penn North, Cherry Hill, and East Baltimore communities to do cleanups, refurbishing, and so forth. But the jobs piece is major. We've partnered with Global 1000 Baltimore and Ray Lewis, that's at Coppin, and then the Baltimore City Health Department, Kaiser Permanente, Maryland Physicians Care, and Johns Hopkins will be at the Mondawmin Mall to do the education and screening.
All right. Listen, I'm so glad we were able to make this happen, but we've got to go, guys. Thank you. Thank you for being
you.
Thank you for seeing the opportunity. Thank you for helping the city of Baltimore and our citizens. We love you both. Thank you.
Can I say one thing to
quick.
Meet me at the tournament.
I'll meet you at the tournament.
August 3rd.
Outstanding. Sounds good. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
You're listening to Marcia Jews and Company, WEAA 88.9 FM, your source for cool jazz. Stay with us. We'll be right back, and we'll have Dr. Christine Horner, who's going to just rock your socks. Good evening and welcome to Marcia Jews and Company. We keep it moving on WEAA 88.9 FM, your source for cool jazz and the voice of the community. Tonight's guest is Dr. Christine Horner, author of Radiant Health, Ageless Beauty, and a nationally renowned surgeon, author, and natural health expert residing in San Diego. She holds two board certifications, the National Board of Surgery, the National Board of Plastic Surgery, and she was recognized as a leader in her field shortly after starting her plastic and reconstructive surgery practice because she successfully ran a national campaign to pass laws requiring insurance companies to pay for breast reconstruction following mastectomy. Now, she has a three-page bio, but I would recommend that you go to Dr. ChristineHorner.com and look at her resume, but moreover, pay attention to her because she has been giving lots of great information for a very long time to people and helping them navigate this whole business of being 40 plus. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
And you know, it's so good to have you back because you were on, was it last year, right?
You know, something like that.
I know. And she said, yeah, don't be asking me what date. I don't know. But I think it's really wonderful to have back and to be able to have relationships with folks who are professionals and the authority in certain areas to be able to assist to make sure that we're in check and we're doing all the right things.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to start with this thing. Your publicist sent this to me and I thought, I want to start this because it was so interesting. Ticking time bomb. Four fatal mistakes women over 40 make. When turning 40 was considered being over the hill, Talk to us about why this is so important.
You remember that? The black balloons and everything.
Yeah, right. Right, the headstones.
What happens when you're decades older than that? Well, you know, the thing that happens is that when we're in our 20s and our 30s, we're feeling pretty invincible, right?
Uh-huh.
And then by your 40s, you know, you actually need to start really paying attention to your health. And there's some simple things that you can do that really can make a dramatic difference in your risk of developing, you know, some of the future diseases and everything. But, you know, with the most people in their 40s now, instead of being over the hill, it's like the busiest time of their life.
Right.
You know, their careers are taking off and they've usually got kids at home or, you know, so they're doing a 50 million things and their health gets kind of put on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just drawing attention to the fact that it's always important to pay attention to your health. And there's simple things that you can do that can really make a big difference.
Okay, like what?
So first of all, one of the big mistakes is really neglecting heart health.
What does that mean?
So most people, men and women included, think of heart disease as a man's disease. I mean, we don't really hear about it very much as a woman's disease. And we think more of breast cancer and, you know, things like that. But actually, heart disease is the number one killer of women. And it kills 10 times more women than breast cancer does. So it's really important to make sure that you are thinking about your heart health. And some of the things that, you know, we've all heard about as far as your diet, you know, and lifestyle, those things are super important. So, you know, the thing that's amazing to me, though, is the human body is so unbelievably responsive. I mean, to me, it's almost kind of laughable where we say, oh, I don't have time to exercise.
Right.
So there was a study that came out a couple years ago that showed that if you jogged for 5 minutes a day, that's it, 5 minutes, it reduced your risk of cardiovascular disease by 48%.
Why? What does 5 minutes have to do with anything? Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. So it's just getting your heart rate up like that, even for that short period of time, can have this really profound impact. Mm-hmm. Now, kind of the thing that we're finding is, too, is that sitting, like no matter how much you exercise, if you sit for more than 5 hours, then it will shorten your life and increase your risk of chronic diseases, even if you exercise.
Okay.
However, if you get up from your desk for just 2 minutes an hour and just kind of walk around and whatever, it eliminates all the negative effects that comes from sitting that long.
I love it.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, so when you think about, okay, I really want to improve my health, most people are thinking, oh my God, it's going to require so much time and effort and everything. But what I'm telling you is that it doesn't necessarily.
Impactful.
Yeah, because you can do some, just having this knowledge, it's like, well, you can do some really kind of simple corrective things.
So it sounds like you could just even run up and down the stairs for like 2 minutes or something.
You bet. And so that's, you know, just kind of like, you know, working it into your day too. If you park far away from, you know, where you're going shopping, or if you take the stairs at work, or, you know, that kind of thing, it really does make, you know, a difference. It's not like you have to go to the gym and work out, you know, crazy like for a whole hour. You can just do a little bit here and there and kind of add it in. And then, of course, diet's super important. And, you know, the main thing I kind of preach is,
nobody wants to talk about diet.
Well, organically grown fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, seeds. Yeah, instead of crap. So, you know, I flew here yesterday.
right.
I flew here. And, you know, on the plane, what do you have? Like, you know, cheese, crackers, but that's not cheese. And like Fritos.
Processed, made up, kind of plastic.
Exactly. And those are your options. So does it feel good to eat those things? No. And then like today, I went to the grocery store and I got like a really ripe peach that was just like, oh my God, this was so good. Man. Yeah. So, you know, like, those kinds of foods are actually super delicious and super nutritious. I am, but I've always kept myself that way. Yeah. So you can actually, when you're addicted to junk foods and your body gets really out of balance, and that being out of balance makes you start craving those junk foods again. But as soon as you start doing things that bring balance into your body, your body starts craving balance. So it's kind of like you actually.
But how long does that take?
Not very long. You can.
I mean, like, really, because I am like the Magnum chocolate ice cream bar with the caramel on the inside and all that. Yeah. That's like where I am.
Yeah. Got it. So 3 weeks, you can actually change your taste buds. The size of them and distribution of them and everything changes. So, you know, you can actually break those habits. And if you do things like, I've always done kind of crazy detoxifications and fastings and things like that, and eliminating all sugar and all salt. Well, 3 weeks later, if I tried to eat like some soup that, you know, I called it cream of salt soup, that was like a squash soup.
Right.
Because it's too much. Right. And the same thing with sugars, you know, too, where it's just like, oh my God, it's too sweet.
So here's another thing that's really interesting is that we don't always figure in our normal lives that being really balanced with your diet is fun. It doesn't necessarily, it's good for the moment, but I sure want something else in the seasoning. I want something else to enhance it. I want it to be an experience. And you know, the world is all about food right now. Everywhere you look, you got a chef making something on television, they're on the radio, they have, you know. How do you, I think it's, is it discipline? How do you focus yourself to deal with the discipline needs to occur?
So first of all, there's education, you know, too, which is you know, learning how to cook with spices because, you know, they have unbelievable medicinal effects, you know, to them. So when it comes to heart disease, for instance, you know, there's certain supplements that you can take that can make a really big difference and really simple ones. So omega-3 fatty acids is one that, you know, comes in a cold water, you know, fish like salmon and walnuts and flax seeds and so forth. But I recommend taking a supplement with it to get enough into your body. But that has great kind of direct effects on your heart as well as lowering your risk of Alzheimer's disease, unbelievable anti-inflammatory properties to it. Vitamin D is another one. I mean, there's been so much. Well, vitamin D you really need to take as a supplement also because now what we've discovered is that what we used to recommend, which was 400 international units a day, is way too low. You really need a minimum of 2,000. And so sometimes people need even more than that, 5,000, 10,000. And we all kind of metabolize it differently.
Wait a minute. That sounds like a lot of drugs going in your body,
Doc. It's just a vitamin. Okay. Omega-3 fatty acids. But these things can make a big difference, you know. So definitely you want to do that. And then things like garlic, you know, can be very beneficial for your heart and your blood. And so you can cook with these, you know, various different spices that, you know, can be, you know, very beneficial too.
So now in looking at that health, that because not only are you talking about your weight is going to impact your heart as well. I don't think we always think about weight and heart in the same sentence.
Well, you should, because it does have a lot to do with that. But yeah, you know, middle age, a lot of times people say, oh, I gained some weight, but, you know, I'm middle aged and you kind of expect, you know, to put some pounds on or have it in the middle and so forth. But actually, what the research shows is that even if you gain a little bit of weight, it actually has a detrimental effect on your health. It increases your risk of diabetes. And with each pound that you gain, there's like, you know, like a exponential amount of pressure that goes onto your knees and joints and things like that. So it actually is easier than you think to keep your weight down. And again, it's just making kind of smart choices. So, you know, if you've been drinking those coffee drinks that are super high calorie, you just go to the ones that are the lower calorie. Don't put all that, you know, stuff.
Oh, I can't have the high caramel, extra caramel on the frappuccino.
And maybe your little ice cream bars, you might want to come back and have it as once a month or something like that. Yeah, and again, going for those fruits and vegetables that are fairly low in calories and stuff like that. And just exercising and moving your body is, you know, just being conscientious and multiple times a day really keeps your metabolism up, you know, some more. So that's, you know,
and I'm walking
really good
a lot
thing.
More
that's
these
good.
Days. Yeah. But I've gained like something like 40 pounds.
Really?
Literally, I've gone from a size 4 to a size whatever that is that doesn't even have a number anymore. It's done in letters.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I weighed the same I did in high school.
Oh, I can't stand you. So let's go to mistake number 2 because that's no fun. I don't want to hear that. We don't want to hear that. So the mismanagement of menopause. Early menopause defined at age 44, but new research is showing menopause is hitting women even earlier.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, so there's kind of an interesting phenomenon that's occurring in this country right now, and that is the age of puberty is actually getting younger and younger. So around the world, the average age is about 16 or 17.
Wow.
And here in the United States, it's about down to 10.
What?
So there's many reasons why we think that's happening, and it has to do with, you know, growth factors and hormones that we add to our foods, and even things like the pesticides and the herbicides have these estrogenic effects and can, you know, cause puberty to come on early. Now, the problem with that is that there's actually multiple health issues associated with it. One of it is that they found that because of all the additional periods that a girl has over her lifetime, she actually has an increased risk of breast cancer if you start your periods early. So
really,
if you look at a person who starts their period at age 16 versus age 10, they actually have a 50% higher incidence of developing breast cancer in the future. Yeah, but there's many things that you can do.
Okay.
The next thing is that, and this is kind of a recent thing that they've discovered, is that these girls that start their periods at these very young ages, that it's not uncommon for them to go through menopause early.
What?
So even like in the late 30s or 40s, you know, if you start to have some of the classic menopausal symptoms like hot flashes and mood swings and sleep disturbances and things like that, my message really is do not go running to your doctor to be put on hormone replacement therapy, because what the research shows us about hormone replacement therapy is that it significantly increases your risk of developing cancer, from breast cancer to ovarian cancer, heart disease increases. It does not do any of the protective effects. There was a study that came out, I'm going to say maybe about 3 or 4 months ago, where they looked at all sorts of different studies. So we call it a meta-analysis, where they combine the information from, you know, many different kinds of studies. And so the conclusion of it, and this was considered a really significant study because it had so many numbers in it, but the conclusion of it was that hormone replacement therapy should never be prescribed to women in the thought of helping to prevent disease, because it doesn't really do that and the consequences of it are so great. So instead, what I recommend is that, again, you, diet and lifestyle, I mean, it makes a big difference, because some of these things are imbalances that are occurring in your body that aggravate these symptoms. And when you correct them, then your symptoms can go away. But there's also a number of natural kind of, you know, supplements that you can take from herbs and, you know, different things like that, that actually have been shown to be very effective and very safe. So, for instance, there's a supplement out of Sweden that's called Relizen, R-E-L-I-Z-E-N. And Relizen is made from Swedish flowers that kind of look like yellow daisies. And so what they've found is that it's highly effective in helping with all the kind of typical symptoms that, you know, you see with menopause, from the night sweats, mood swings, you know, hot flashes, things like that. And so they've used it in Europe for about 15 years. And it's the number one hot flash formula in France, actually. But they brought Relizen to the country here about 3 years ago. And the thing I was very impressed with the company, they have studied it kind of with the same rigors that you would do with a pharmaceutical medication. So they've done double-blinded placebo-controlled studies in university, you know, settings
trials
here.
And
so what that research shows us, and that gives us the very best kind of data when it's structured that way, is that Relizen was found to be very effective for all those different menopausal symptoms. And the other thing was that they found that it didn't work hormonally. So they call it a non-hormonal product. So it doesn't increase your risk of developing breast cancer or any of those other things.
Great.
And if they carried it to a placebo, they found that it didn't have any. It was exactly the same as placebo. Here we know we're super safe. In fact, you know, of that, there's over 2,000 OBGYNs that are now recommending it to their patients here in this country. So now,
is this something that I could get at the at one of the vitamin stores?
Actually, not. You can only, it's actually something you can only get online.
Oh, okay.
So I have it, I have more information in my book on it, because like I'm impressed with it. And also I have the ability to order it on my website, which is drchristinehorner.com. That's drchristinehorner.com. And when you order through my website, you actually get a discount, you know, on it. That's right.
We like discounts.
Yes,
we
do.
Discount queen.
Yeah.
Extra. Okay. And so that is something that you have seen, and you know that it's working and it's helping people. And, you know, and I think what's really interesting about menopause, so like sometimes it just goes away and then it seems to just come back. Is there something that we're doing that occurs to make it come back?
Absolutely.
Is that all that 40 pounds I just gained? So what is it?
Absolutely. So again, you know, I'm actually trained in Ayurveda, the traditional system of medicine from India that Deepak Chopra talks about. And so the system is 5,000 years old, but it has the most seemingly simple advice, but it has very profound effects. So kind of conceptually, what we talk about is that everything that we eat, everything that we do, every thought that we think either helps to put our body into balance or takes our body out of balance. And when your body's in balance, then your inner healing intelligence is super smart and can really take good care of you. When you disobey those natural laws and rule books of being a human being, then it causes the body to take, you know, to go out of balance, and it obstructs the flow of that inner healing intelligence. So basically, we do this whole thing where it's like, okay, talk to me about, you know, your whole diet and lifestyle and everything. And then, you know, when I do that with a woman, I can really say, oh, okay, for instance, here's one thing that you're doing that's really causing your body to go out of balance, and that is you're staying up too late at night.
Yes.
So Ayurveda says go to bed by 10, get up by 6 o'clock. Mm. And actually, modern research shows that those hours are exactly the hours where you get optimal sleep. And it all has to do with these hormonal fluctuations, and not hormones, estrogen and testosterone and progesterone, but things like melatonin, which is our sleep hormone. So if you go to bed by 10 o'clock, there is a spike that occurs in melatonin between midnight and 2 a.m., which you never want to miss, because if you do, the consequences are really spectacular. So they found that melatonin is not just a sleep hormone. It also is a very powerful antioxidant, and it helps to regulate estrogen. So as it goes up, estrogen goes down. And it also helps to support the immune system and many other functions. Now, all these hormones kind of interact. So it also interacts with like insulin and cortisol, which are stress hormones. And so what the researchers have shown is that if somebody stays up to midnight, for example, on a regular basis, their hormonal balances get so screwed up that they actually have almost twice the incidence of heart disease, diabetes, obesity, and certain cancers like breast cancer and prostate cancer. So simply backing your bedtime up, and if you're a night owl,
I can't go to sleep.
Sure you can. So this is what you do.
I'd wake at 10 o'clock.
15 minutes earlier every week. So next week, you know, like if you normally go to bed at 11, go to bed at 10:45, and just, you know,
get in the bed, my eyes will not be still.
Okay, so then in my book, I have a whole chapter on this with all these different recommendations, and you see what in the past, what would happen would be that you were, your whole lifestyle was kind of this thing where you wound down and kind of settled down and did all things to prepare your body to go to sleep. And now we're watching television on, you know, the computer, getting the light, you know, that causes our melatonin levels to go down, too much stimulation, and then you have trouble falling asleep. But if you do a number of different things as far as allowing yourself to relax, don't watch, you know, disturbing movies and things like
that,
but
maybe
listen to, you know, soothing music, take a hot bath. You can use, you know, things like lavender helps to settle you down, drink some chamomile tea, and then, you know, your body's like, okay, I'm ready to go to bed now. But you really have to work with it to begin with about backing that bedtime up 15 minutes every week until finally, you know, you've got it before 10 o'clock, and then come up with some rituals that are really effective in settling your body down.
Okay, I'm going to work on that, and then I'm going to call you and let you know.
Okay.
I'm going to make
expect
that a
report.
Yeah, no, I'm really serious.
Okay.
So this is what? This is July the 18th. So August 18th, I'm checking in.
Okay. All right.
I think that's really good.
Yeah.
That's a good time. All right. So now we also want to talk about the weight gain acceptance. What does that mean?
So again, when you in middle age,
yes, we know.
Are you accepting it? Okay. So people have a tendency to gain some weight, but you know, it's kind of out of doing some bad habits. And again, if you just have a little consciousness about it, about trading out some of these higher calorie things for lower calorie, and actually, when you're consuming fresh fruits and vegetables, for instance, your body gets all the nutrients that it needs, and then it doesn't feel hungry. But if you're eating things like that, you know, the ice cream bar.
Yes, girl, around 9 o'clock.
Okay. That doesn't really have a nutrient.
Doesn't translate.
No, that's nourishing your body. So then you end up getting hungry,
right,
you know, again, because it hasn't gotten the nutrients, and it's saying, hey, you know, feed me, give me the nutrients. So if you give it the nutrients that it needs, then you don't feel, you know, that hunger. And then, again, kind of wherever you can see about increasing some exercise, walking more, taking the stairs at work, parking, you know, further away, you know, from a place. And I think it's really important to do an activity that you really enjoy. So for years, I'm an athlete. I love exercising. When I don't exercise, I'm miserable. So that's never been a problem.
Yeah, I like to go out dancing. Yeah, dancing's good for me.
Yeah. So, you know, I was a runner. I still am. And lifting weights and all these things I was doing alone, you know. So after a while, after decades, I was like, okay, this is boring. Like, I just get in the gym and want to get out of there. And I'm, you know, even running, I was bored. So I decided that I was going to change some sports, do some new things that would be social. So I started playing tennis and started ballroom dancing.
Oh!
At the same time, took incredible mental and emotional strength to be bad at two things. I wanted. But right, now I'm not. Now I'm not. And it's wonderful because it's so much fun. And I play tennis probably four or five, you know, mornings in the week, and have this whole group of women that are my new friends now that we play with. And then ballroom dancing, it's like, you know, there's tons of, you know, friends there too at the studio. So, and then you're getting exercise in with something that's really fun and you're enjoying, and it doesn't feel like, oh, I gotta, you know, go to the gym. Yeah. So find something that works for you.
So what about, and we're going to, I can't believe we only have like 3 minutes left.
Yeah.
So how about number four, not loving yourself?
Yeah. So, you know, the thing that affects our health more than anything, so more than diet, more than smoking, more than genetics, is feeling loved and supported. Mm-hmm. So our emotions actually affect our health more than anything else. With each emotion, we have little chemicals that are released, and it affects our immune system. It affects how our DNA is read. And so what the researchers have found is that the emotion of feeling loved and supported is the most impactful thing on your health than anything else.
Wow.
So if you're in toxic relationships, that's the most damaging stress to the human body. So it's super important. And I would say, you know, you surround yourself with people that are loving and supported. You have 7 billion choices now. So you had a lot of choices. But it also starts with loving you. You know, it's very common for women to be super critical of themselves and talk so badly to themselves, you know, like they never talk to their friends like that. And so you have to really learn to treat yourself like one of your best friends too. And that produces all that great chemicals. And then also helps you to bring people in that are loving, supportive too.
And attract them.
Yes.
Attract them.
Yes.
So when you're open and warm and feeling good about yourself, then you can attract that positive energy. And I think too often we forget that.
Yeah.
You know, we're so consumed by the madness that's swirling around us that we get into that fast lane with it.
Right.
And we don't know how to always get off.
Right. Yeah.
And that's a...
Or listen to our self-talk. You know.
So we're, like, we're almost there.
Yeah.
So what should we do? I mean, we have... Christine, you could come back here like all the time because we could just talk forever.
For hours, that's
right. I know, which is really wonderful.
Good, yes.
Which is really wonderful.
Yeah.
But let us tell us how the name of the book, what's on your website, how to keep in touch with you.
Sure. So the name of my book is Radiant Health, Ageless Beauty, and it's everything you need to do for extraordinary health and longevity. You can find it everywhere, Amazon, you know, Barnes and Nobles. If you want an autographed copy, you can get it from my website, drchristinehorner.com. And on my website, I also have a free newsletter you can sign up for. I offer telephone consultations for patients that are interested in their health and particularly for newly diagnosed breast cancer patients.
Okay. Look, it's a wrap. That's a whole segment. Can you believe we went that fast? It feels like we're only here like 2 minutes, right? All right. Well, this is it. I hope you all got a lot of information, and make certain that you follow up with Dr. Horner on her website. And you heard her say that she also does telephone consult. Thank you for listening to Marcia Jews and Company. We keep it moving on WEAA 88.9 FM. Until next week, keep it moving.